Welcome, everyone. This is another episode of Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine. I'm Shelley Wrench, along with Dr. Nash Gabriel from the Gabriel Cancer Center. And I'm sure that a lot of people are aware, and there are some that are not, but our practice actually does a lot of clinical research. In fact, you actually dream, breathe, think, maybe not on the golf course, clinical trials. So we have a lot of robust clinical trials in our practice. So I think it's important that people understand what really are clinical trials, and I want you to explain kind of in layman's terms.
Clinical trials. First, thank you, Shelley. Clinical trials are the only method available to us to get experimental drugs approved by the FDA so that they get commercially marketed.
So every drug goes through a clinical trial?
Every single drug has to go through robust multiple clinical trials to show that it's effective, it's better than before or what's available, and also it's safe.
So are there like different stages of the clinical trials?
There are different stages. There's we call them phases. So initially, if you have a chemical or you design a chemical that you think would be useful to treat cancer XYZ, then you first do some testing in the lab. And we are very fortunate to have extremely loyal cousins. We call them the mice and the rats, mm-hmm. right? We use them, sometimes in monkeys, we use them to the initial testing to see, number one, that what is the safe dose that these little creatures can tolerate. And second, a lot of the times cancers are implanted in these creatures. So that way we can tell if the given chemical is killing cancer cells in those animals. And you do more testing. You check the blood levels in these animals until finally these basic scientists whose best friends are the mice and the rats, they finally reach a conclusion that this is potentially a useful drug for the animals. The safety at dose A, B, C is okay. And immediately they shift that drug to people like me.
And then what happens?
Now, people like me, we read and digest.
You meaning you as a physician?
As a physician, as a clinical researcher. And there's many of us nationwide. We look at that drug, and usually it's a drug company who spearhead this and get people like me involved. We study the drug. What do we, from the information that was obtained from the experimental animals, what should we expect in terms of side effects, in terms of benefit? And then you design a clinical trial, we call the phase one, where you try the drug at increasing doses for specific patients with specific cancers. And it keeps, and usually when you do this, the phase one and any phase of the clinical trials, because it is complex, because it's a slow process, you really are better off to do it in multiple centers, so that you shrink the time needed to achieve your goals.
Right. And I think even now the government is trying to even shorten that up a little bit more.
Yeah. President Trump, I think it was one of those off the hip shooting when he said, we will cut the development of a drug to 2 years only. I had nightmares about that statement because I don't know how you can do that. Currently is about 11 years. That's 11 years, the time between a chemical is identified or discovered and
on the shelf.
It's on the shelf to be sold or used by the general public. If we can make that 8 years, I will be extremely happy. If we can make that 4 years, I think that's unbelievable. I don't think we can do that. Just because of the complexity of the process I was just describing.
So maybe he thought there was a little bit too much red tape, that it was taking that much longer?
I don't think he listened to the head of the FDA, who's a very intelligent, smart man, Dr. Gottlieb. I think You know how politicians and businessmen are. Sometimes they underestimate the obstacles and the challenges that face the scientists. They just think everything is like business and you can manage it that way. I was just explaining the phase one, how long does it take simply to digest the information obtained from animals and come up with a formula that is safe and potentially effective for the patients. How long does it take to write that protocol? Believe me, right? Protocol is writing a book.
Right.
And you submit to the FDA. Those bean counters and pencil, what do you call them? Paper pushers? Then the FDA, they look at the protocol and they make sure that there is changes. And when there's amendments or changes, they send it back to you and you sit down and meet and ask consultants. That's when you're gone. So it's a very complex process and it takes a long time. And I don't think the president knew what he was talking about. Maybe he should stick with building buildings and run the country rather than talk about medicine, because I feel a little bit jittery when non-physicians talk about medicine, really.
Now, is there a difference between pharmaceutical-sponsored clinical trials and what's the other side?
The other side, we call it the cooperative group.
Yeah.
The cooperative group trials are trials that are funded by the U.S. government. And there used to be a lot of them. There used to be organizations, 5-6 of them, until about 5-6 years ago. It was discovered that those trials were becoming redundant, inefficient, and even Obama himself thought that they were becoming outrageously inefficient, and he cut the budget by 50%.
Now, in our center, we just do the pharma trials.
We only do the pharma trials. Why? Well, when I was in academia in St. Louis University in Missouri, I was involved even in a semi-leadership position in these cooperative groups. And I tell you what, after 2 years, I decided I will never be part of that process because it was painfully slow, because you have 20, 30 people designing clinical trials, and every one of them, they're all intelligent, they're all high IQ, and they're all accomplished people. Every one of them want his own idea to be in the design of the trial. So you get 25 ideas. Some of them conflict with each other. So it takes about 2 years, or it took about 2 years to design trial. Guess what? By the time you finish the design and write it, there have been 3-4 new discoveries that will make that design absolutely redundant.
Right.
No. So I decided this is it. I only deal with pharmaceutical company. In fact, 99.9% of the drugs discovered are discovered by drug companies, not by the almighty United States government. No.
Well, even at that, the cooperative group trials, were they as meaningful? I've never seen that on the other side.
No,
so did they do meaningful ones, or was it like phase three?
Hardly meaningful, Shelley. And there were some of them were so ridiculous in design. The reason was because there was money given to them every year and they needed to spend that money. And sometimes they had to come up with something to spend the money. That's why I tell you, I decided not to do it. Back in 1989, 1990, when I left St. Louis, I said, this is not good medicine. And a few years later, I decided to launch our clinical research program, which is actually nationally recognized now.
Right.
I think there are some people who think it's the best in the nation. In fact, today, we open a clinical trial, and the only centers that are opening the trial available is Duke University, University of Michigan, MD Anderson Cancer Center, and Gabriel Cancer Center. That's it. They don't want any more.
Wow.
Yes, we are in the elite. I mean, hate to brag, but we are in the real elite. And in fact, you know what? They even come to us for companies, and they ask us how to teach these big academic centers how to do it more efficiently and accurately.
Now, how...
Because you have awesome employees.
Well, I know that. How does the pharma company choose you, and how do you choose what trials you're going to bring into the practice?
Right. It's two ways. They choose me and I choose them. Now, how they choose us, basically, the process of doing clinical trials and developing the drugs has to be a flawless, zero tolerance to mistakes. And I mean it. Zero tolerance to mistakes, because you're dealing with dangerous drugs, dangerous design, and you are actually building the future of cancer care. So when drug companies trust you with one or two trials and you do well, they trust you with three, four. And when you do real well, then you become their gold medalist. So anytime they have a promising, nice trial, first thing they do is they would email me, what do you think of this? Sometimes they ask me, what do you think of the design? What do you think of the potential? I decide which trial to take based on the merits. So when they offer us, let's say they offer us a phase one trial, first thing I do, I say, give me the information about those little things, the mice and the cats and the animals, and that you experiment with them. I want to know what happened to them. I want to know when they sacrificed those animals, what organ damage that the drug created. I also want to know when these animals were implanted with cancer cells and cancers grew in them and you gave them the drug, what happened? After I get all that information and after studying the scientific rationale for using that drug for disease A or B, I study that carefully. Then I make up my mind, is this something I want to offer my patients or not? Most of the time, 99.9% of the time, these trials, when they are designed, they are watched and analyzed by the FDA, by institutional review boards. So there is no, nobody is treating the humans like we treat our little cousins, the rats and the mice.
So when you decide on a clinical trial, do you also think about what's already out there for that particular indication? And does that make a decision in whether you're going to adopt that clinical trial into a practice or not?
Oh, by the time the clinical trial is offered to me, I don't have to go through that decision-making process because the people who designed the trial, they have in mind that whatever is available in the market is something they have to compare to. The FDA will demand that. So when you design trial, you send it to the FDA and say, guys, this is our design. What do you think? The FDA can be very useful because they can tell me, hey, listen, for this cancer, there is now drug A, B, C. So you want your drug to show it's better than A, B, C, then compare it to one of the three. However, we need to warn you that in 3-4 months, there is another drug that might be approved. What do you think?
So it's not like we have a clinical trial that you would only take this experimental without having what the standard of care is or at least knowing what the standard of care is.
Absolutely. Every single clinical trial, my intention is I want to offer the patient something is at least either equal to what's available or give them what's available. That depends on the phase. So when we do phase 2B or phase 3 trial, we start comparing. We just jump from phase 1, right, where we tested the drug, the concentration, toxicity, and all that. And now we have reached a dose we feel comfortable with. And we say, okay, now let's compare it with a drug that's known to work on this cancer. So you take 200 patients. Half of them, you give them the standard available. The other half, you give them this drug. That's one design. The other design would be, how about if we add this drug, the experimental one, to what we know is available in the market? So you take 300 patients, maybe. Half of them, you give them the standard drug. The other half, you give them the standard drug plus the experimental drug. And see at the end. And this is how the process works.
So no one's taking a risk by going on a clinical trial.
Actually, you take a lot of risk if you don't go on a clinical trial. Because I think there was a commercial last night on TV when the guy said, we don't wait for history, we make it. When you get treated in the standard of care, you are treated in the history. You are treated by what was discovered 5 years ago. When you are treated in a clinical trial, you are making history because the drug or the experimental drug that you are about to receive will only be available commercially 5 years from now. And the word commercial is important, Shelley, because actually when we decided to talk about this, it was about the economics of clinical trials, right?
Right. And there's a lot of patients who ask me, you know, I'm going to be on this clinical trial, so I, you know, does my insurance cover it? Does Medicare cover it? So I have to go through everything, all the steps with them, meaning that the standard of care on a clinical trial is always billed and paid for by the insurance company, whether it's Medicare or Medicare HMO or commercial insurance. Meaning that, say the patient has lung cancer, they're going to need a CT of the chest once every 2 months, whatever it is. What's the standard care? They're going to need to see you every so often. They're going to have CBC, CMP drawn at regular intervals. So that being the standard of care, then the commercial or a commercial payer or Medicare pays for that. Now, what in the one case scenario that you said something is added to the standard of care, so you've got this experimental agent that is given to you by the pharma company.
Free
to give to
nobody
the patient.
Nobody should charge for that experimental drug.
Right. There's nobody.
Nobody should.
There's no one that you. There's no way that you can. There's no code for it. There's no way it can go on a claim.
Well, there was a law passed 2 days ago by Congress. The right to what? The right to be treated. This is the law that passed that scared me to death, where patients with terminal illnesses will have access to experimental drugs. And I don't think they have figured out who will pay for it. I don't expect the drug. We're just kind of shifting to a different subject, but this is a law passed two days ago. I think the president is because he talked about it a few days ago. I think he will sign it. I think I have a lot of misconceptions and misgivings about the whole law. But anyway.
But anyway, the standard of care on a clinical trial is always paid for. Whatever is non-standard. So say, for example, in that same lung cancer patient, the clinical trial says that we have to have a CAT scan twice a week. Well, that is totally atypical. That is not standard of care. So then the clinical trial sponsor would pick up those CAT scans.
But Shelley, you know what? For the listeners, we just can make simple statements. Anytime you are on a clinical trial, the total cost to your insurance or to Medicare, or to your own wallet, is less than when compared to when you are treating the standard of care. Why? Because some services that Shelley was describing are covered in the clinical trial. There are, let's say, if we are comparing a drug available in the market versus an experimental drug, the experimental drug, if you are getting it, it will be provided for free. So any way you look at it, you financially, you are much better off. But I am not saying that you should go on a clinical trial because it's less expensive. No, I'm saying you should see clinical trial because it is the future of medicine, meaning you will be treated in a futuristic way. Like now I see commercials like Optivo or Keytruda, it's kind of fun to see these drugs available in the market. 7-8 years ago, we were giving those drugs to our patients for free, by the way, because they were experimental. They were clinical trials.
Right.
Now the cost is about, what, $15,000 a month or even more?
Yeah, a little bit more.
It's kind of funny to watch that. And yet we had dozens of patients. In fact, currently we have about 7 new drugs similar to Optivo and Keytruda. We're experimenting with them. Everybody thinks that they will be better, I believe that, better than the current drugs. And we have dozens of patients on those clinical trials. Guess what? They're getting that drug for free.
Right.
It's kind of amazing. And in fact, I even shared some images with you, Shelley, and your staff of the unbelievable responses. Like there was the lady from Philadelphia. I think she's coming tomorrow to be interviewed on the other radio station. A phenomenon. Did you see that CAT scan?
Yes.
And you saw the lady herself. I mean,
she disappeared.
Yeah, she was almost dying in the office when we saw her first. And now she started joking and she's not on oxygen and she's exercising. It's amazing, these new marvelous experimental drugs, what they're doing.
Well, I was just remembering the one patient who we had coming from New Jersey. He actually saw one of our billboards and came from New Jersey, had to fly Angel Flight every Sunday night and go back on Wednesday because of one of the new, it was a vaccine?
It was a vaccine. I tell you, Shelley, there's something to be said, is the shift in the society in the United States when it comes to healthcare attitudes and perceptions. It's just amazing. I mean, it's been fascinating. It's been fascinating in the last, say, 20 years, where it used to be your doctor tells you to go there and you go. Your doctor tells you to go to this specialist and you go. You're like an obedient little dog, sit dog, stand dog. Now, patients are different. Families are different. Daughters are different, by the way.
Right.
You mentioned the word cancer, and these people are on the internet, which has been great. The government website, clinicaltrials.gov, has been one of the best services ever, because now wherever you are in the world, you go to that website and you will have access to information about any experimental drug anywhere in the world. I think there's currently about 60,000 clinical trials being conducted. They are all available there. And all it takes is you go and you name the disease. Let's say you say pancreatic cancer. It will give you those trials, right? And you start looking through them, and you want phase one, phase two, whatever. It's almost like you're shopping. And then when you decide on a trial, or you decide that maybe this is best suited for me, you put your zip code and immediately will show you the map with the closest center to you that's doing clinical trial. Now, sometimes that center is 1,000 miles away.
Well, in this case, it was, you know, from New Jersey to Ohio, and that one didn't come off the internet. That was the patient discussing his...
It was a bar talk.
It was bar talk, and the bartender overheard and said, you know, I don't know what to say about this, other than I have a friend who's living in Kentucky who's going somewhere in Ohio. So all they had was my cell phone number, and that's how they found us.
Surely smart people are seeking clinical trials. I mean, I hate to say this, but and in increasing numbers. I mean, every day. Currently, more than 60% of our patients come from out of town or out of state seeking clinical trial. It's amazing. We had last week one from Dayton, one from Columbus, one from Huntington, Virginia, one from Detroit, another one from Detroit. It's just amazing. In the last 2 weeks alone, we have about 78 patients coming, all seeking unique clinical trials, because the people now know what we know, that the standard of care comes as a result of the sweatshop work that people like us do over 5-6 years until we get those drugs approved. And people want to be part of the process, not to be part of the process, meaning to be a macho thing. No, meaning I want to take advantage of this before my cancer take advantage of me.
And I think probably some of our research staff members do think it's a sweatshop from time to time.
I tell you what, kudos to them.
Yes,
they're the best in the world. I mean, they're amazing. And the degree of accuracy, and they're almost compulsive in what they do. And that's the way it should be. That's why only about 10% of oncologists actually do meaningful research. And meaningful meaning 10% of what I do. We are kind of the top tier. I mean, we are gold medalists in this. I don't think there are any practices in the U.S. they do the volume and the extent and the complexity that we do. And in fact, we're trying to teach others. We have a network, we started a network we call Sergon Network of 80 plus oncologists nationwide, where we help them do research. We help them train their staff, educate them on how to collect data and all that, because I want to show that the president was half right, that we can accelerate the process, not to 2 years, maybe 5 years. Actually, I'd be happy with 6. 7 will still be nice. I would consider it as an accomplishment.
I think it's something that the listeners should know. I know this because we've been doing this for a very long time, but actually patients do better. They have better outcomes by being on a clinical trial, just because there's so many
proven
people looking over
proven,
you.
Shelley. Proven it's, by research. Yes.
It's not just you taking care of the patient. Now it's those study monitors, it's the pharma, it's FDA, it's everybody watching over that one particular patient.
Yes, it's been proven. Studies have shown that just the mere fact that you are on a clinical trial, when they compare your longevity and quality of life to those who are not in clinical trial, same disease, you're superior. Because exactly the reason that you just mentioned, there are It's not spare eyes or spare ears. There are dozens of spare eyes, dozens of spare ears, and many, many, many good brains, meaning women's brains, that really are watching. That was a joke. Okay.
Yeah.
They're watching these patients. In addition to that, I mean, it's a win. It's amazing. Win-win. And that's why people are kind of just coming more and more seeking clinical trials from all over the world, not only to us, to all centers. All centers who do clinical trials are getting a lot of people interested in them. And they're running away from the ones who do the whatever is available on the shelf, which is the most monotonous, boring thing ever
the
in life.
The algorithm.
Oh, the follow the guideline.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one, my favorite thing. Yes.
And if people want to understand what the guidelines are, we did do an episode on that as well.
We did.
Yes.
I think they should go and listen to the guidelines also, because it's intermingled with the clinical trials, because the clinical trials are in the guidelines, but they don't know where to fit them in the guidelines. To me, the clinical trials, and to most patients these days, it is number one option. For the daughters of the patients, and these are, I keep mentioning the daughters because they are the ones who are the noisy ones. They're the ones.
Not only noisy, they're the ones looking on the internet.
In a good way. Noisy in a good way. They do their homework. They do their due diligence. They go on the internet and they all come with very armed with knowledge. They sometimes just come and say, I want this trial. So I take the opportunity then to explain other trials available, because I feel it's my duty that people make choices based on comprehensive knowledge, not on knowledge on one area only. Fascinating field, isn't it?
It is. Well, thank you very much for this. I hope that the listeners really were able to get more benefit out of understanding clinical trials in a deeper from a deeper perspective.
And Shelley, honestly,
and knowing that it doesn't cost any more out of your pocket, and a lot of times it's less.
Well, Shelley, our program, Good Medicine, Cheaper Medicine, is the whole theme is to explain economics of medicine. And today we were trying to explain that when you're in clinical trials, the experimental drugs are provided for free. The bottom line is you shouldn't go on a clinical trial because it is cheaper than standard of care, which it is. But you should go see clinical trial because it's the best form of medicine.
And it doesn't cost any more.
It costs less.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.